6 minutes after 11, Karima Brown, political analyst, joins me in studio. We're going to be unpacking some of the major political events for the last 24 hours. You have heard the breaking news there in our EWN report. Helen Ziller apologizing unreservedly at that press conference called by the DA for her tweets. She will no longer be part of the federal exec and the federal council of the Democratic Alliance. And she will be restricting her commentary on social media, it would appear, to matters of governance related to her premiership, but she remains on as the premier of the Western Cape. I'm hoping in the next couple of minutes I can interview, in fact, Musi Maimane about what went on. Also, we'll play you a little bit of that audio to know, just a signal once we have it. But I want to start off, Karima, by analyzing firstly the story around Minister Malusi Gigaba. I read from these letters on the open line this morning, where he had clearly decided to override the Director General when he was Minister of Home Affairs and granting citizenship rights to the Guptas. What do you make of that?
Well, Eusebius, I think it is just the latest granular detail and evidence that is beginning to emerge from this treasure trove of 200,000 emails that we have that indicates the extent to which Malusi Gigaba is in fact the enabler of the Gupta family. You would have remembered that he started his career as minister in the Zuma administration in a big way when he was the Minister for Public Enterprises. And under his watch, and remember, he's the shareholder, the representative the shareholder representative. So he gets to appoint boards at state-owned companies. It's under his watch that we see a cast of characters, all Gupta-linked, from Salim Essa to Iqbal Sharma to Sparks Motseke, and of course these two Indian nationals that you and I have been speaking about on this program, and a host of other characters, Ben Ngubani, Brian Mulifi, Colin Machila, all of these people enabled in various ways to serve the interests of the Guptas, Malusi Gigaba having the authority, the power to put them there. Now, he's been saying he's not involved in adjudicating matters of tenders. He doesn't interfere with boards. What we see with the letters is that the minister does stray from that mandate he's given himself when the Gupta family is involved. Here you see his director general laying out the criteria as to why the Gupta family cannot be naturalized because they don't meet the criteria that's required. And then you see the minister overriding that, using that discretion. And of course, he needs to explain that to us. He needs to explain why that was necessary. That is the latest in terms of the
well, if we put that next to also then when he had his other caps as Minister of Public Enterprises, writing directly to the chair of DENAL.
Yes.
Is it hasty to say that a pattern is beginning to emerge, that every time the minister had been asked until the leaks happened whether he has nefarious links with the Gupta family, he has flatly denied it, including telling us that he doesn't have any powers to interfere with, make appointments with, the goings-on operationally with the boards. But it seems like he's being caught with his pants down.
Completely around the ankles, actually. The problem with the letter that he wrote to the then DENAL chair, Eusebius, is that he does two things for which he can be criminally charged. The one is he interferes as the shareholder. He's not meant to be doing that. The second thing is he instructs DENAL to ignore the PMFA requirements of the Treasury and, in fact, says that he personally will deal with the matter with the Minister of Finance and instructs them to continue. Now, that pattern that emerges there is not just confined to Malusi Gigaba. It is all the ministers in the inner coterie of President Jacob Zuma. Cast your mind back to Minister Batabile Dlamini. She did precisely the same in the SASSA matter. She didn't want to comply with the Treasury and Constitutional Court provisions. Now, if you look at the way in which state capture has been described, particularly by the academics that have looked at this phenomena, they speak about the fact that this is a political project And at the center of it is the aim to dislodge the constitutional state, replace it with a set of shadowy institutions. And you see exactly this. So it's Malusi Gigaba, and of course, you get Batabile Dlamini. They do not want to confine themselves to governing legally and lawfully as is stipulated. And that is why Treasury has become, you know, this big battlefront when they didn't occupy it. Of course, now the capture in many ways is complete because Malusi Gigaba is now sitting with his hands firmly on the public purse. He's the Minister of Finance.
There are two other levels of analysis that is absolutely urgent here. The first is that even if we didn't have the Gupta leaks implicating the minister, we are supposed to have this minister being at the center of the economic cluster, talking us, working us out of a recession. He now has to be in about 10 different conversations at the same time. Can we have confidence that this man will be accepted both by local enterprise, let alone by foreign direct investors, as a man that can be trusted when he tells local business and international investors South Africa is open for business?
No, look, I think it is absolutely crystal clear to me and to many others, including leading economists, that the minister suffers from a credibility and trust deficit, both in political terms, but also in technical terms, Eusebius. We've had, Moody's doing their forecast on Friday. It was hardly a surprise. We've had the announcement of the recession, and the minister had the much anticipated press conference cancelled yesterday. He told us that he's meeting the leadership of the governing party. We know that he attended the Economic Transformation Committee meeting yesterday. But he has not, and he's meant to meet the economic cluster of ministers. That includes people like Gugile Nkwinti, Ibrahim Patel, Rob Davies, and others, because these are all ministers that preside over economic development, rural development, and so on. So, first of all, it's clear that he planned the press conference and he didn't even consult with the economic cluster. And remember, it's Gugile Nkwinti who's the head of that cluster. That's the first thing. As someone coming from the governing party, one would have thought he would have touched base with the governing party on its approach to things like monetary policy, measures that you can do to relax the interest rate band. And when, you know, you are dealt with the recession, because there's certain instruments that are in the toolkit to deal with recessions globally. We see different governments doing it. One would have thought that Malusi would have been able to demonstrate what in the toolkit he's going to be using to give us an inkling. Instead, what he did was he went to the Black Management Forum on Friday evening, that is after Moody's downgraded, gave their negative outlook, and attacked the black middle class, basically. But also, the week before that, in the midst of all these details coming out about SOEs, and particularly the exposure of the debt at Eskom, the minister told an investment forum at Ekurhuleni that there's absolutely nothing wrong with state-owned enterprises, that there's occasional lapses in government. Now, that is not a finance minister who has an idea of what is required to deal with the recession, with the lack of growth in our country, and with the stubborn unemployment, structural inequalities, and the poverty that bedevils us. There's nothing that gives anyone the confidence that he has both the political trust and the technical know-how to navigate us out of this.
Krema, I want to move on to other parts of the news cycle in the last 24 hours that have been so incredibly bizarre. Before we take a break and do that, and of course at the end of it all, we're going to come back to the DA story breaking news. I mean, when we look at Minister Gigaba, it also seems, and this is a slightly parenthetical question, the way that he's dealing with this from a strategic communication point of view is bizarre. We've got his spokesperson, who normally tweets with gay abandon, tweeting sheepishly, and you've got the minister himself imagining, as so many politicians often wrongly do when they're facing crisis, that silence is golden.
Look, I think there's a larger problem for Malusi Gigaba. He is broadly speaking, within the Zuma faction of the African National Congress. And over the last few days, there's been some spectacular developments. We saw it when Brian Molefe decided to take the way in which he was treated at Eskom to the Labour Court. And we saw subsequent to that the sacking yesterday of Claudie Motsoeneng, the strong man in charge of the SABC until very recently, tied to the hip of Jacob Zuma. And then last night at 11 o'clock, we saw Ben Ngubane, former board chair at SABC, current or until 11 o'clock last night, board chair of Eskom, resigning. So, and then, of course, the other big thing for Malusi Gigaba, that is the issue, is that the president's top aide, Lakhela Kaunda, confirms to the Sunday Times that which the minister is still denying, that yes, the information contained in the emails about her meetings with the Guptas, her dealings with them, her links to their companies, all that is true. So what it illustrates to me are two things. One is that there seems to be a crack in the Zuma camp about how to deal with the avalanche and the deluge of stuff that is coming out. Some people are saying, let us come forward and admit to that which, you know, is contained in the emails. And you see people like Lakhela, Ayanda Dlodlo taking that option. Then you have people like Malusi, who's trying to live in La La Land and say, you know, I've got nothing to worry about because these emails, the authenticity has not been proven. The problem for Malusi Gigaba, of course, is one, that the EFF has him in their sights. They have gone to lay criminal charges. They are writing to a series of countries and companies talking about the alleged corruption. The difficult for Malusi is that both China and America, both countries that are related to the Prasa locomotive deal, have a very, very tough anti-corruption approaches. The Americans go everywhere in the world. They are the ones who went to fetch Sepp Blatter in Geneva, you know, the most powerful man in global soccer. They arrested him, humiliated him. And like I said on Xolani's show, Minister Gigaba needs to lawyer up fast, because even if the South African authorities are not going to come for him, he is going to be tracked, because this is a global deal that went down and it involves a range of other countries. So there's a crack, there's a difference in approach that is emerging in that clique. And then, of course, the problem for the minister is the longer he waits, the more he makes himself vulnerable to more information, greater detail that is coming out. Julius Malema told you himself, Eusebius, that he's got a lot more to deal with. The security team is going through the emails. I know for a fact that Julius has been calling some leading business people saying, Mchana, your name is coming up in the emails. I know that some ANC leaders are calling the editors of the National Sunday newspaper saying, hey, is my name there? And I know that the Hawks are beginning to question people. People have begun to be questioned, because the corruption probe stemming from the state of capture report is the basis for the Hawks' investigation. That was confirmed to Karen Moore yesterday. So the key question now for Malusi Gigaba isn't so much, is the email real or not? Has the Hawks contacted you? Have they put sets of questions in front of you?
19 minutes after 11, let's put aside Minister Gigupta. What do you make of him? Do you still have any, in terms of your perceptions, what do you think? Is he still credible? Is he the right man for the job? And how much trouble do you think is he? 011-883-0702. Give us a call and have your say as you're listening to Karima Brown giving her political analysis. And also in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. We're going to take a bit of a breather, and then we're going to move on next to Ben Ngubane and also Claudie Motsoeneng, and connect that with the dots in the bigger fights inside the ANC. And then on the other side of the news break at 11:30, I'm going to play you Helen Zille's apology, and we will deconstruct what the implications are of how the DA handled the matter. Okay, I want to play a clip next so that we can talk about what happened also late last night in the resignation of Ben Ngubane as Eskom chair. And this is what the Eskom spokesperson, Xolani Qoma, had to say.
It shocked me personally, and I know a couple of guys that I spoke to at board also were shocked. I don't know. I don't think that they actually expected the resignation to happen yesterday, even actually the resignation in the first instance to happen.
Okay, well, I mean, geez, you know, it doesn't seem like the spokespersons in this country are on top of what their various principals and the people they're meant to be spinning for are doing, Karima. But what's interesting for me is that there's a danger in the public of setting your sights so low that you don't stay with the hard questions because you want to give someone kudos for at least resigning. But actually, this guy should be fetched before he leaves the Eskom building because there are many questions that remain.
Absolutely, Eusebius. I think the fact that he's resigned isn't actually a victory. It is a sign that Ben Ngubane is jumping ship. What Ben Ngubane is facing, most certainly, we know that for a fact, is a parliamentary probe. We have a public enterprises committee and an ad hoc committee at the behest of the opposition party, supported by those ANC backbenchers. Remember, Pravin Gordhan is now in that committee. They are meeting, I think, on the 22nd or the 21st to look at how they're going to conduct this ad hoc probe into Eskom and probably into other state-owned entities as well. And if anyone wants a glimpse of how that's going to go, just cast your mind back to what happened with the committee into the ad hoc committee into the SABC chaired by Vincent Smith. So we're going to get a lot of granular detail there. The problem with such a probe, of course, is that it is not a legal one. There's no criminal investigation. But Ben Ngubane resigns amid a criminal investigation that is underway by the Hawks related to State of Capture. Now, the State of Capture report, of course, has Eskom as one of the institutions at the center of it. And that report emanates from the former finance deputy minister, Mthembisi Jonas, who went public and said under oath that he was offered a bribe by Ajay Gupta in the presence of Duduzani Zuma and Fana Hlongwane. And we know that the Hawks are busy investigating. So Ben Ngubane is likely to come up in the wash there. We also know that through the Gupta email leak that Ben Ngubane has in fact been a business partner of some of the Gupta-linked cast of characters. We see him popping up there in the Central African Republic. So I think that the question of Ben Ngubane thinking, or those who think that he's resigned, that it's the end of the story, is complete nonsense. We saw when he was Eskom board chair that he still had to come to the parliamentary probe to account for what happened at the SABC. It's likely that that accountability will continue, of course, unless he has residency in Dubai and he skips, you know, the country. But I think that the noose is beginning to tighten around Ben Ngubane's neck. And we're beginning to see a couple of people that are beginning to become the first casualties. We first saw that with Brian Molefe, yesterday Claudia Motsoeneng, last night Ben Ngubane. And it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, what is going to happen in the next few days and weeks. There are multiple probes at multiple levels, some lodged within Parliament, others lodged within our courts, others lodged with the police still.
But before we get to those implications, let's just drill down a bit more. One of the things I find curious is that Lynn Brown hasn't told us what is in the content of the resignation letter. Also, in her very sheepish and terse letter last night from her spokesperson, they basically say that they thank the guy for great leadership. I mean, if the guy's got great leadership, A, why have you cliffed him? And number two, why not wait until the AGM? Why hasn't she shown us what the actual resignation letter says? Because that is critical to understanding the minutiae here, Karima. For example, if it turns out that he was forced to resign and did for reasons related to his own competency and ethics, then there are also legal implications for how a court needs to assess affidavits deposed by him.
Well, the very basic question one must ask someone like Lynn Brown is, how does Ben Ngubane even qualify to have become the board chair of Eskom, considering the mess he left at the SABC, right? Lynn Brown herself is under investigation for misleading Parliament, and of course also for okaying the Denal Asia deal, if one looks at the fact that the outgoing Director General in the Treasury had effectively said that VR Laser is technically insolvent. So how does a Minister of Public Enterprises sign off on a deal with a company that is technically insolvent? Now, you spoke earlier about pattern. The pattern that we pick up there is that, and we saw also recently from the Gupta leaks, the current Denal chairperson was leaking information statement from the minister on what is required in the tender for that very deal to the Guptas. And the question that Lynn Brown needs to explain to South Africans, those who of South Africans who voted particularly for the ANC, and that's how she ended up as a minister, is whether she was doing this willingly with the board chair of Denal. Did she know that he was leaking her correspondence to the Guptas, and that they were in fact in turn using that so that they could adjust their tender bids so that it comes in within the specification? So Lynn Brown herself is complicit and has to answer. And of course, she herself is going to be hauled, Eusebius, in front of that parliamentary committee. And she too will have to explain to the nation if she's been questioned by the Hawks, because the two ministers that effectively enables and manages and assists the Guptas in taking control of state-owned entities is none other than Malusi Gigaba and Lynn Brown. They need to unburden themselves.